You're listening to the Rural Advancement Podcast. Rural Advancement provides resources to empower, equip, and encourage rural pastors and churches. Join our community by visiting us at ruraladvancement.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rural Advancement. This is the podcast that is by rural leaders and for rural leaders. It is our goal every single week, week in and week out, to bring you content that is not just spoken to the rural church, but is spoken by people who get it, people who have lived, worked, and ministered in small, out-of-the-way places, and people who understand the immense value of the work that God is doing there. I'm your host, Joe Epley. And today, we get an opportunity to talk to a pastor who comes from Clements, Minnesota. His name is Pastor Tony Vietti, and I'm excited to dive into his journey. It's been a weirdly recurring theme in the last couple of weeks that we have had people who have spent a real amount of time kind of in the corporate world, kind of going through these big companies, and really getting to dissect the lessons that come from that world and are brought into ministry. And so I'm just super stoked for both sides of his story. But the first thing I want to say is, Pastor Tony, how are you, sir?
I'm doing very well, Joe. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, we love this kind of, you know, context for having these conversations, and we love the sheer variety of stories that we get to, take part in. And so why don't we start there? We always ask our guests just to share a bit of their own ministry journey. And obviously yours involves quite a bit of career, even before you jumped into pastoral ministry. So walk us through the point A to point B. Tell us a little bit about where you're pastoring now in the process, you know, that kind of thing. So
certainly. Thanks, Joe. Yeah, it's been kind of an interesting ride, I would say, because it's not always going to follow the same pattern. A lot of people will just go to college and this is what they want to do, be a pastor, and then they find themselves in a church and then they move forward. I didn't do that. I went to college and then found myself working for a Fortune 500 company eventually at Best Buy headquarters, and then became a pastor. So that whole journey of doing the corporate business aspect of my life and then doing the pastoral aspect of my life was very interesting. So to kind of start, I grew up in a Christian home. I grew up as a Baptist. My mom was very strong in teaching us as children to go to church, to follow God, to make that one of our, you know, priorities in life. And so that was all I knew. I mean, I grew up in the church. I had a great mentor as I grew up in a Baptist reverend, a pastor, who really kind of inspired me. And now that I've gotten older, I find that I really count on that from him. But during those early formative years, it was sort of like, you know, what's he talking about? I want to do fun stuff, you know?
Sure, sure.
And so I grew up Baptist. I ended up going to a college. I thought with my mother, we had kind of decided, I'm going to give 1 year of my life to Christ. I'm going to give 1 year, you know, I mean, I'll just do that. And I ended up signing up to go to a Bible college after my initial first year of college. And I ended up going to, at the time it was St. Paul Bible College. It's a Christian Missionary Alliance College. It's now called Crown College. And going there for a year ended up being two, but I ended up being an RA. Little claim to fame, Joe, I have to say, my college roommates, at St. Paul Bible at the time, ended up starting a small little animation company called Big Ideas, where one of them was Bob the Tomato and the other one was Larry the Cucumber. So
that is the Christian claim to fame, man. Like I'm in the presence of Christian greatness, you know?
Right? I know. I got to watch Phil Vischer and Mike Naraki take those baby steps as they put together what I think is an incredible journey for themselves, but just wonderful guys. And, you know, we used to watch a lot of Monty Python, and we used to watch a lot of David Letterman back in those days. And then we did puppets. And so basically what Philip always says is that he just put all those together, and that happened, that came out VeggieTales.
What an incredible combo. I really like that. I think even in our phone conversation, you mentioned getting referenced as the Italian guy I roomed with my freshman year in his biography. So, I mean, there it is in stone, you know?
Yes. Right. So. Yeah. I'm the Italian guy that he roomed with. Philip and I started rooming together our first year, and then we stayed together for that second part of the second year. And it was a good time, but those guys went on to do some great things in that whole area. And I got to see the birth of that. But I went on. I went to the University of Minnesota after that, and then finally got a job at Best Buy headquarters. And I was there for about 18 years, and learned a ton of things. The whole back end of how business works and things like that. I
Sure.
wasn't a business major, you know. I was more of a journalist major, and I did a lot of communication stuff. I was in the field of communications. I did freelancing for Midwest Sports Channel and ESPN and things like that. And so my background wasn't so much business. And then I just learned a lot of leadership, a lot of business at Best Buy. And they're good at that. They're
Yeah.
really good at that. In fact, the gentleman who started the company, Dick Schultz, I met him a few times. And you know, I think the thing that always impressed me about him was that he was always looking to make people better around him and then to train you to take his job. He always said that. Now,
Wow.
right? I mean, okay, you're going to train people to take over Best Buy, but no, I mean, he just was always asking people, train someone to take over your job. That was kind of his one of his things that he used to talk about. And I just always found that very a good way to go as a rule of thumb when you're training people in leadership. So I learned a lot at Best Buy. Like I said, I was there for 18 years. While I was there, I was asked by my pastor at the time that maybe I should go back to school. It seemed like a lot of people were noticing that I might have that kind of proclivity to be a
True.
pastor. And it wasn't an unusual request. I had heard that over my life several times. And so I went back to school at the Minnesota School of Ministry, the Minnesota Assemblies of God here in the state of Minnesota is really great district in that they have a great schooling program.
Yeah.
They combine with North Central College as well. They have to do a lot of cross training and things like that there. But it was a great way for me to go to school, not spend a ton of money, and also really figure out if this is what I wanted to do.
Sure.
And I started going back to school, and I was still at Best Buy. And then at the time, Best Buy, a couple of people at Best Buy asked me to start some Bible studies at the campus at the headquarters, and we did, and we got going. And at the time, there was probably about 20, 25 people in this thing called the Christian Connection.
Sure.
By the time I left, there was over 700 people attending Bible studies and doing different things with the Christian Connection. It was an incredible experience of people having the opportunity to express their beliefs at the corporate campus. And Best Buy was very good about that as well. So again, my experience at the corporate level with that company has always been, I've always told people, it was extremely positive.
Nice.
So I learned a lot, had great managers, great directors. They taught me some really good things, taught me a lot of balance, a lot of time management. And I think those things have all come into play, especially in the rural church.
Yeah.
Moving forward from there, I ended up being a campus pastor, executive pastor at a traditional Assemblies of God church in downtown St. Paul,
Sure.
Summit Church. And I got to learn a lot from the pastor there who had been a pastor at a couple of different churches. If you know Minnesota at all, or anyone listening, they know that there's a church, Assemblies of God Church called River Valley Church, led by
Yeah.
Pastor Rob Ketterling. And he has taught a lot of other pastors as they have gone out to other churches. And the pastor that I was learning from was one of those pastors.
Oh, very
So,
nice.
yeah, so he taught me quite a bit about how to navigate the whole, because I mean, it's different. The whole church arena is different than the corporate arena.
Sure.
And, you know, from how much you get paid, which is a very glaring thing
Yeah. I don't know if we're
right?
ready to dive into that on the podcast. That's going to hurt my
Yeah.
feelings too much. Okay.
That's okay. But I mean, you know, you have to talk about some of this stuff, and you know, and just down to like human relations and how you develop people and
Sure.
where do you go from here, you know, as you take your journey in a church. And so he taught me a lot about that. And so as I moved through that, it was an incredible experience. I've had some really good mentors in the whole church arena. And I find that to be one of the most beneficial things that I've ever done. And again, I have to attribute it to Best Buy. Best Buy was very, very particular about the fact that you own your own development. You have to make
Nice.
sure that you follow it, you track it, you write it down. If you want to develop, make sure that you want to develop and do it yourself. And
Sure.
so I've always been very proactive with finding mentors to talk to,
Yeah.
and asking. And some people are willing, and some people are maybe a little bit shy about it or whatever, but overall, I find it a great opportunity. And most people, if you explain to them the things that you're trying to figure out, I think most people are very good about being mentors and
Yeah.
helping people out in that kind of an arena. So
Yeah.
I had some great ones. Fast forward to now, about 3 years ago, and that would have been 2021. So post-COVID, or just barely post-COVID, I was asked by the Minnesota District and another mentor of mine if I was interested in coming out to rural Minnesota to visit a church. And I looked up the town, and the town said 6,000 people, and I was like, oh, that's plenty.
Yeah.
That seems like, I don't know if I just didn't picture in my mind how many people really 6,000 meant. Now I live in a town where the largest store is Walmart, and that's pretty much it. That's where everybody shops. And
Yeah.
it's like one of those things where you just don't know until you know. I just didn't know what rural life was like. I grew up in metro areas, and when I raised my children, my wife and I lived just south of the metro in the Twin Cities area for 27 years. And so moving out to a rural area was a big step. And I was like, really, God, is this what you want?
Sure.
We're empty nesters now, and but we stopped here. We came in. We preached. We talked to the board. We met people, and yeah, God just kind of told us that this is the right place to be. He didn't
Okay.
give us all the answers for rural ministry, but he did
Sure.
tell us that this is where we were supposed to be.
Well, it gives
So
a
that's kind of the
snapshot.
journey.
You know, the church when you got there, I mean, not that numbers determine success, but like give us a snapshot of what that congregation is like. Are we talking a real small church? Has it grown some? What's that rhythm been like for you?
Sure. Yeah. It was a very small church. I would say very. Now that I've been in the rural area, I know what very small is. But it was about 40 people, 45 people attending regularly when we started. And again, it's been about 2.5 years. We're now about 85, so we've doubled a little
Nice.
bit more than that since that point. The church itself was kind of in a little bit of financial dire straits, and that was a lot of work that we had to do as a board. And honestly, the background I had at Best Buy served me well in that whole area, being able to work with mortgage companies and work with bankers and figure out what would help and what can help happen at a church instead of closing your doors. And again, these were all things that I found out a little bit later. I think if they had been on the job description, I might have thought
It
twice.
is. It's always how it goes, you know?
It was listed in the other duties as
Yeah,
necessary.
no, miscellaneous categories. They're my favorite, actually. But,
Correct, correct.
well, let's do this. Let's dive into some of the lessons from Best Buy. I just kind of, I mean, obviously, super formational, not just to your journey as a pastor, but as a leader, as somebody who, yeah, owns their own development, as someone who has to kind of take these steps. What is one of your biggest takeaways? I know we mentioned maybe some of the managers you worked for, but like talk to me about some of the just these big picture takeaways from that that you feel like have guided you in pastoring as well.
Right. I think one of the things that we don't apply in pastoring very often are like goals of development for yourself or for people that are on your staff. Now, in a rural church, your staff is made up of volunteers. I mean, that's just the way it is. And if you don't develop people with a regiment, with a process, then you're going to lose people. And one of the processes I learned at Best Buy was SMART goals, to make a goal that's measurable, to make a goal that's actionable. to make a goal that you're responsible for, and then to make a goal that you can take to the next level. I've always found that type of a goal can help anyone, but especially in the rural church, because most volunteers and most people that are helping at church have not experienced something like that. I
Sure.
mean, these are things that you get from Gallup and you get from these programs that a Fortune 500 company can spend on their employees. And it's intriguing and it's helpful, and it can be kind of tedious at the time when you're at a Best Buy when you're doing that kind of work. But I tell you, it is more than valuable in a small church setting because it gives people something to aim for. It gives them an idea. Funny story, I've got about seven people on my staff, volunteer people on my
Right,
staff
right, right, right.
here at Northwood Church, and most of them like me to tell them what to do. Like they say, Pastor Tony, give me a list of what to do. And so the job then is to help them create that list. Not so much me just do it, because that just gives me another thing to do, which
Sure.
then I might as well just do it at that point, the job.
Right.
But help them create the list, help them create the goals, help them create the development. I guess one of the overall things from Best Buy was the engagement of the employee that was so important to Best Buy. And I find the same thing being here because it's so easy to feel taken advantage of in a rural
Yeah.
church. It's so easy then for you to then start feeling resentment towards not just the church, but then overall towards God, right?
Yeah.
And I think some people get turned off to church because of that. You find these people that, have said, well, yeah, I used to run the nursery. Now, nursery is one of those things that, is like
God
a
blesses
special
everyone.
case,
Yeah.
right? I
Yeah.
agree. I agree. But you find those people that have said, I used to run the nursery, and now they're not even going to church because there's
Yeah.
resentment and hurt, and they have not felt like they were developed or had even a light at the end of the tunnel. Like, where do you go from there? Okay, so you took over nursery. There's got to be steps forward. You can't just take over nursery and then just always do nursery from now until when Jesus comes back.
Right.
So I
Yeah.
think those are probably some of the bigger things that I took away from Best Buy, was creating a development plan, not only for staff, but volunteer staff, and
Yeah.
making them feel like that they're worthy of some kind of a development plan. I just think that that gives them an idea of, I've got a goal, I've got a place to go, I'm moving forward.
Yeah.
One of the things that we employ at Northwood Church is the MnSOM school, the Minnesota School of Ministry, MnSOM. And we use that as a development program here. Most of the people that are staff here are going to school. And
Oh,
so
nice.
we help them with studies. I do internships with them. I teach at the Minnesota School of Ministry, so it gives me some insight into helping them to create a path for them to do that. If they want to be a kids pastor, or if they want to work on with youth or worship and prayer, that kind of a thing. So we
Yeah.
utilize that as one of our programs for development for our staff.
Yeah, no, that's great. And honestly, what I love about everything you just said is Jesus had a word for that, and it was just discipleship, right? I mean, like
Absolutely.
it just really like, and I love what you're saying, because one of the things I think, because I think people get skeptical at times about like how much should we pull from other settings like corporate or other elements, but like we look at such a great strength in the corporate world of saying, hey, we are going to make accountable measurements. We're going to make, measured steps that, and like, I think sometimes as pastors, we understand the inspirational side of discipleship. We get the why, we get the need for it, we get the drive to see it happen. But again, you're putting the toolkit in place to say, okay, well, we're going to make goals then, and we're going to hold people accountable to those things, and we're going to invest in them. And like that is, the process by which discipleship happens. So I love that that was kind of what got to emerge out of that. And obviously, by saying, hey, I've got seven volunteer staff who are going through this stuff, like you are putting that into practice and seeing it bear fruit, which is exciting.
Right. Yeah. It was funny because we had a staff meeting. I don't know, it was a couple of weeks ago, and I overheard one of the staff members saying to the other one, "Well, what's the ROIC on that?" And of course, ROIC is the return
Return
on
of
invested
investment.
capital.
Oh, there you
Yeah,
go.
and it's an interesting statement because we used to use that all the time in Best Buy, and I say it quite often because I'll say, okay, we want to do a parade. We want to be in
Yeah,
the
what's
parade.
our
We're going to wear
ROI? Yeah.
T-shirts. What's our ROI in that? What's going to be our return on that? Now, again, we have to be very careful in the church world because we also have the Holy Spirit that gives us quite a
Right.
bit of return, right? And
Right.
you never can tell what's going to happen, but you count on him for it. But the wonderful thing about teaching ROI or that, another phrase I like to use with the staff is the juice worth the squeeze? Are we going to get something from it? And now they start using that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And they start looking at it in different programs, oh, should we do a booth downtown in this little, will it,
Right.
that kind of thing. So yeah, I think all those things coming from the business world can't help us as long as we don't close ourselves off to supernatural
Right,
things that
right.
occur
As long as it
within the
doesn't
church.
become the only thing that we utilize, 'cause again, it's a tool in the hands of God, not necessarily the other way around, you know.
Exactly. Well put, Joe.
Nice. Well, let's talk about this. This is always one of my favorites because part of my journey about 10 years ago was kind of coming to rural from a much larger context. And I know that that is a lot of your journey as well to say, hey, I go from predominantly the Twin Cities area, these metro areas all your life to say, hey, now I'm in a town of 6,000. What was the hardest adjustment to small town life? And then how do you navigate kind of, yeah, that different pace I think that comes from that?
There wasn't a Chipotle.
Ha! Fair
No,
point, fair point.
I mean, it's interesting because when you live in a rural town or a small town, and particularly if you are a pastor, or let's say you're a leader of a business in town, I've noticed this as well since I've become part of the chamber. If you run the local grocery store, everybody knows you and everybody feels like they have a part of you or that you need to answer to them. Same thing for pastors. Same
Yeah.
thing. Like if you live in town, people will stop by, knock on your door, and just start talking to you. And it's one of those things where if you are not an extrovert, which fortunately I am, but if you're not, it can be very intimidating.
Yeah.
And so I found that that's probably one of the biggest things that I learned is that my business is everybody's business. It just is. Now, when I was a pastor in the cities, that wasn't the case. We had more
Right.
boundaries. So the boundaries are different. That's probably the biggest thing. The boundaries are different in a rural town. And I honestly don't have a huge problem with that, but that doesn't mean that that other pastors would or wouldn't, and it doesn't mean that pastors' wives would or wouldn't. My wife
Sure.
is actually more of a quieter person. She is our admin at our church, but she gets to the point where it's like, okay, I need to have a little time. And I'm
Yeah.
like, I get it. I get it. And I do understand that. I do understand that we have some pastors on our staff that are, a little bit quieter and need a little bit more boundaries. Overall, Joe, though, I would say that probably the boundaries was the biggest thing that I had to learn in the rural town, that they don't exist very much.
Yeah, no, it's quite an adjustment. Let's actually drill that down on that just a little bit. So like how do you know, obviously with boundaries now being kind of in flux and with this kind of state of being known, you know, like, hey, you are constantly, people are aware of your existence at all times. How do you then create meaningful boundaries or how do you find the way through to say, hey, I want to be sustainable. I want my spouse to be sustainable. Like, how does that work? So, I mean, maybe talk about that for a second. How do you carve
Sure.
out time for yourself, you know?
Yeah. No, I think the best way that I have learned to and honestly, I can't even say I've learned it, Joe. I'm not real great at it and I'm still really learning it, but I've been told many times that you need to have a Sabbath. You need to take a Sabbath. As a
Sure.
pastor, you need to take a Sabbath. And that's kind of the beginning. I think that's sort of like just baseline creating a boundary. You need to have a time for yourself. You need to, as a pastor, you're expected that you're probably getting up in the morning and having your devotion time and walking with the Lord and then you're come to the church and then when you get to the church, you go to the altar and you're praying, and I'm being a little facetious right now, but
Sure, sure.
that's kind of the expectation I think that people
Right.
think that pastors have. And when you're a rural pastor and you come into the church, well, the first thing you got to do is make sure that there's no plumbing leaking, or that
Yeah.
the rooms are clean, or that the doors were even locked. And then if they weren't, is there someone roaming around in the church?
Right.
There's things like that that occur. So I think overall, making sure that you have a Sabbath has got to be the initial thing for any type of a boundary, making sure that you have time for yourself and your spouse. And then I think after that, it's a matter of just letting God kind of lead you. I think different churches will have different expectations. Our church is very open. Our church is very conversational. They're a very friendly, outgoing church. And so I find that my boundaries have been more purposeful. I have to literally say, I'm sorry, I can't do that. I have got to go home and take care of this, or I have got to spend time doing this, or whatever the case may be. But I have to be purposeful with that. And you just kind of count on people's goodwill and that God will help you say it in a way that is not offensive.
Yeah.
And but I really do believe that that can be a place where pastors can get tripped up, because if we're burning the candle on both ends, well, the candle's going to burn twice as fast,
Yeah.
and it's like one of those kind of situations. And we have to make sure that we're there for people of the church, and training people to be there. So that's the other thing that comes into play here, is the whole training aspect of your staff and training them to do some of that so that you can have some time for boundaries. Yeah, I
Oh.
think that's one of the biggest things that we have learned here at Northwood Church, is that we have a really good program where people are learning to do this kind of a thing. I guess it's that word that you mentioned, discipleship.
Right.
And yeah, and they are learning how to do it so that I don't have to do all the baptisms. I don't have
Right.
to do all the marriage counseling. I don't have to go and visit everybody in the hospital, which in a lot of rural situations, that's what you're expected to do.
Right.
I mean, I
Yeah.
remember the first day, my first month on the job, I was given a list of all the shut-ins, and I was given a list of everybody who was in the hospital currently, and I was given a list of people that used to come to the church, and they said, you need to talk to these people. And we
Man, it's
very
like a hit list. It's just a good,
right? Just
gosh.
crossing them off as you go
Yeah.
through, and we very quickly got to a point where I started sharing that with my board and saying, okay, you guys are going to help me with this. We're
Right.
going to do this together. And then that changed to the board saying, hey, how about you get some pastors and help you with that? And I'm like, I love that idea. Great idea, board. Let's do that.
Yeah.
And so then we started commissioning people who wanted to learn how to be pastors and things like that,
Yeah.
and putting them into situations where they could actually learn that as an internship. So,
Yeah.
yeah, I think discipleship helps you with creating boundaries. I really do.
Yeah. This next question kind of relates to that whole kind of developing pastors and all that, because of course, in a rural setting, you don't often have the money or the help from the outside. You don't have the capacity necessarily, resource-wise, to just be bringing in paid staff all the time, or really, if ever, in some contexts. And so you kind of have to, by nature, move to this model of building up people from within. But one thing that I thought about your story that I think is just great advice or a great conversation to have is you mentioned part of your own story was this feeling at one point in your journey of being taken advantage of, or you would witness leaders who felt taken advantage of. And you've already touched on it just in conversation, but you said, hey, I wanted to make sure that my leaders didn't just show up, get worked to the bone. And then leave the church hurt because they're like, man, I gave my everything and nothing, and I never got taken care of in the process. So, yeah, maybe spend a few minutes just giving us the practical ins and outs of, hey, what are you doing to prevent that exact scenario?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, Joe, because I think that being felt like you are taken advantage of can be, like I said earlier, one of the biggest things that people leave the church in. And they have been serving, they've been like, what you may call like a super volunteer or a staff member. And yes, I had been in that situation, both in my corporate world and in the church world. You can try to build your own brand, which is kind of what they call it in the corporate world,
Sure.
so that you are on a track to move forward. And I can't say that I didn't try to do that when I was at Best Buy. I did. And for a lot of the time, I moved from, senior or from manager to senior manager to director to senior, as you move through the corporate ladder. But you also end up doing things that I think overall, not that you regret, but that you feel like, I don't know if anyone appreciated that. And I
Yeah.
think when that occurs, that's when you start getting those feelings of resentment. And I've always felt like that I didn't want my staff or the people that are going through the discipleship program at the church here to feel that way. And I think the best way to do that is honestly having a process for them to see the light at the end of the tunnel, having the development process, having a goal to shoot for, whether that be that I'm going to get ordained, which can take up to 4 years with the
Yeah.
Assemblies of God Church, which we are of. But it can take, you get credentialed, then you get licensed, then you have to have like 2 years of service,
Yeah,
and then you get
interviews, all
ordained.
those things. Yep.
Right. And so that could be the goal. It could be just that you want to study more as a layperson. It could be that you just want to get licensed. But establishing that goal and then letting someone know that that's important to you as well as it's important to them. You're saying, hey, I agree with you. I'm going to come alongside with you on this. And that's what I usually end up doing. Now, currently, I'm interning with, or I am the, how do you say that?
Supervisor, director, you're the manager of the intern. I don't remember.
Okay, I'll say it this way. Currently, I'm actually have, okay, I'll say it one more time. Currently, I have about five or six interns. Like they are
Sure.
doing the internship with me. And what I do is I walk through them and walk through their meetings with them. We go through their paperwork. They turn in everything to me first so that we can go through it before it gets turned into the district. It's one of those things where I take action with them and make sure that they realize that it's important, not just to them, but to me as well. And I think overall, that's kind of the key. If it can be, if someone can feel like what they're doing is as important to someone else as it is to them, resentment really has a hard time breeding. And I guess I've always just felt like resentment is one of those things that can really stop a church, especially a small church. It can really stop them. Because if someone's all of a sudden starts feeling like, man, no one cares what I'm doing. No one cares that I organize the potluck and I clean everything up all myself all the time. When stuff goes unrecognized, people start feeling resentment. And so we do things like volunteer recognition days. We do like
Sure.
certificates. We do postcards where we reach out and we do thank you cards where we say, hey, great job. I've had people say, and it hasn't even been ones I've written, although I do this, but I've had other staff members write thank you cards. And then I've had someone come to me and said, I've had a thank you card from that staff member on my refrigerator for 6 months. And every time I see it, it makes me smile.
Wow.
Now, that makes a big difference to people. And for a small church, I mean, we can't throw a banquet. We can't cater in,
No,
prime
yeah.
rib. We can't do something like that. So we have to come up with other ways of thanking people for what they do, recognizing them. Some people don't like to be recognized. And so you have to know that. You have to get to know who's doing your things for your church, who's doing your volunteer for your church, and how do you recognize them? What's the best way that they like to be recognized? So one of the things that I've done is I've had all of our volunteers take the Strength Finder program. We
Yeah,
give that,
absolutely.
and it gives us an idea of how they like to be recognized. It gives us a great just like overall view of what does this person like to be recognized. It's they're very quiet. They don't like to stand up in front of everybody. Well, you know what? We'll send them a card. We'll find them off to the side and say thank you. That could even be embarrassing for them. So we'll just send them a card. Or they like to be recognized and we'll make them stand up, hey, Joe, thank you so much for, leading the men's group this past week and for bringing in all the bacon for, whatever. It's that kind of a thing that gives us an idea of how to address people so they don't feel resentment. Yeah, it's a
Very
huge
nice.
thing, and it's a huge thing in churches. It can be, and I don't think we talk about it enough.
No, absolutely. And honestly, even while you were talking, from my, again, previous 10 years of experience in one small town church, names and faces came to mind where I look back already self-reflective going, okay, did I
Yeah.
appreciate enough? Did I, you know, has anyone told them lately? I bet they're still doing what they were doing 10 years ago. Is someone noticing that? I mean, it's obviously hugely applicable if my mind turns towards it really just like that.
Right. We have an overall goal at our church that I think all of our, I mean, I don't think, I know that all of our staff members have bought into, and that is that church evangelism. Local church evangelism for a rural area is a lot different than it is for a metro area. In a metro area, you can build a huge church and people will come from, the surrounding area. And because there's so many people in the surrounding area, it gets full. In the rural area, we're finding that we need to go to people. You
Yeah.
know, we have a lot of farmers in our area, and a lot of times they have to work on Sunday mornings, or they
Yeah.
work when it's nice out. And so if we don't create opportunities for them, so that gives us the progress, I guess, to look at other towns around us and say, how can we help them? For instance, we have a town that's about 35 miles south of us, and they were closing the Assemblies of God church there.
Oh, wow.
And so what we decided to do was help them. And so I started scheduling all of our staff members that are learning to be pastors
Right.
to start preaching at this church. So they got experience preaching to a small congregation. They got experience of setting up a whole Sunday service. How
Yeah.
do you run it? You know, using Planning Center or whatever software you want to use. How are you going to run your church service? And then letting them do it, and then getting a recording of it, and then sitting down with them and like walking through it, or just talking over what their notes were or whatever. But most of our staff members have preached there multiple times. Now, what's occurred is this church kind of approached us and said, hey, we can't keep doing this ourselves and we'd like some consistency. Can you help us? And so what's occurred over the last 6 months is they've actually become a campus of ours.
Oh,
So
wow.
we're an 80, 85 plus church on Sundays, and yet we have a campus.
Yeah.
And you know, and that's a 25, about a 25 plus person church on Sundays.
I love it.
And it's interesting because I'm finding that the church reminds me of the old Acts churches, or
True.
John's church in Asia Minor, the seven that he wrote the letters to in Revelation. Whereas they become a cadre of churches. They become a group of churches where instead of making people come to us, we start going to them. And there
Yeah.
are tons of small churches in this, or rather small towns in this area that don't have churches. Now you'll hear people throw numbers at it, well, if it doesn't have 500 people in that town, then you can't
Yeah.
put a church in it or whatever. Well, we're finding that some of these smaller towns of 500 will have more people attend a meeting about a church than a town that will have 2,000.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the ways that we are starting to take forward steps. In fact, one of our staff members has now become a campus pastor. So this is
Oh,
his
very
journey.
nice. Nice.
Yeah, so he will be licensed actually this coming April 2025. But currently, he's our campus pastor in our small church in Springfield now. And every Sunday he preaches. And now we meet once a week and he comes in and says, how do you do this every week? And
Yep,
I'm like, you're learning it. You're
here we
learning it.
are. Yeah.
Yep. And
Man.
so that's another opportunity and avenue for growth in the rural church. I really believe that that's the way that rural church will reach people in these small communities. I don't think it's going to be we're going to build a big tent and everybody come to us. It's going to
Yeah.
be, we'll have a main tent and then we're going to put smaller tents out around.
Yeah. And I love that the sometimes I think we make the mistake of thinking, well, only big church can plant churches, you know, and so we have these
Right.
small churches jump in. But one of the benefits that I think we overlook often is the fact that a big church might plant in a small town and be successful in some ways. But like, again, part of even the reason for this podcast is that you have people who get the context planting in the context. And so, like, it's really neat to say, here's slightly bigger rural planting and slightly smaller rural, and having that kind of shared experience of like, hey, we get the challenges you face. And so that's an exciting concept. I definitely think it really provides a nice capstone to this part of the conversation of just like, man, we work hard to develop leaders from within. We kind of have that grow up, and then we take them somewhere and do something, you know, and it's pretty exciting.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean we're a town. Redwood Falls is a town of almost 6,000 people. There are like eight or nine churches here. I mean, so if you were to look at the population and divide them up, I mean each of our churches should be 500 plus, right? I mean if everybody went to church, you know. Well, that's not the case, obviously.
Obviously, sure.
So how do we reach those people? Well, a lot of those people don't go to church, but a lot of those people need other avenues, need different times. And so we try to expand that. We're right now, currently, we're the only church that does a Sunday evening service because
Oh,
there's
sure.
not another one. So we're looking for different ways. And our Sunday evenings are run exclusively, and again, this gets back to boundaries, are run exclusively by the staff. I don't have anything to do with it. I play on the worship team and I'll come sometimes and listen to them preach. But it's run by the staff. They run the Sunday evening service.
Very nice. Well, hey, as we finish out, first of all, this has just been so delightful. But as we finish out, one more question. As a note of encouragement to those listening, because I think sometimes I worry that I'm saying it too much, and then I recognize that this following question is just not something you can say often enough. But talk briefly how you have taken steps to fight kind of the sense of loneliness that can come to a rural pastor. So walk us through that as just kind of a final encouragement to our listeners.
Sure, yeah. I think it's funny. I was told as I became a pastor that pastors can really only have pastor friends.
Ugh,
And
brutal.
I've always thought that was, yeah, right. And I've always thought that was an interesting comment because well, at the time, most of my friends weren't pastors. And I was just starting to become a pastor. And the pastors I had met were great people. I'm not quite sure that I was going to hang out with them all the time, though. You know, it was like one of those things. And so I find that the rural area is prime for people to become friends to a pastor. I just, for some reason, have had some really good opportunities with people to make friendships. And I think overall that helps. Now, for me, one of my hobbies is one of the pastimes of this rural area down here in Southwest Minnesota is pheasant hunting.
Oh, cool.
I like to pheasant hunt. Well, fortunately for me, it's very popular down in this area. And I've met people doing that. So I've pursued hobbies, and because of my hobbies, I've met people to do that and become friends with them. And then we got very close. In fact, one of them is one of our staff members, and you know, he likes to hunt as well. I think overall, to be, and I don't really mind being by myself either. So
Sure.
I guess
So we
that
recognize our own bias in a sense, sure.
right. Yeah. You know, I mean, I don't mind that a whole lot, but I also really do appreciate the coming together of people in a rural area. So we do a couple of different things here. We have what we call a ministerial association where the pastors of all the churches all get together pretty much monthly and we talk about different things in the city and different things that we can affect. And then we kind of split it off because we have kind of the spirit-filled group of those people and then the other group and the spirit-filled group are these other guys. We get together pretty much once every other week and we'll have
Nice.
coffee and we'll talk. Yeah. And that helps with that kind of a thing. For me personally, the Minnesota district is really good about getting their sections together. So Minnesota district is broken up into different sections.
Sure, yep.
Our section is very tight. Like the pastors in this section are very close. We talk quite often. We email all the time and text all the time. The person who kind of leads our section is very good at communicating. And so we have monthly meetings, but weekly we talk. I think that helps with a lot of that, being able to go to people that can help you bounce ideas off of. And then overall, the Minnesota district in itself is just really good for any kind of questions or any kind of things that you need to ask about.
Sure.
Overall, I think it's the church, though. I find that life becomes church. I've said to my wife, isn't it weird that like my whole life revolves around church? Like our whole life, like our employee, they're our employee or our employer rather. But yet when we are spending time, we're there. When we're spending time with people, it's people of the church. And so it's kind of interesting how that kind of can take over. And I could see how people could get a little bit lonely with that kind of a situation. But I find myself doing more of the proactive reaching out, trying to make sure
Sure.
I'm part of different things. I joined the chamber, you know, the Rotary. I thought about it. They'd like me to join. I haven't done it yet, but and we do events and stuff in the city. Try to become part of our community. And I think those are things are all important as a rural pastor to help people get to know your church, but also to maybe circumnavigate some of that loneliness that can come of being a pastor alone in his church. You know, I mean, it can sometimes get a little quiet at the chapel.
Absolutely. No, those are great. Well, Pastor Tony, thank you so much for just a delightful, I mean, we've covered a lot of ground, great conversation. I think our conversation, I mean, I know it's blessed me already, and I'm assuming it'll bless our listeners as well. So thanks again for coming on.
Absolutely, Joe. It was a pleasure. It was wonderful to meet you. I can't wait to listen to some of the other podcasts as well, but thank you so much for inviting me.
Absolutely. Well, from all of us at Rural Advancement, we just want to say once again, it is our heart and our mission every single week in and week out, to bring you content that speaks to right where you are at, spoken by people who understand. And so we hope that you're equipped and challenged and inspired to just keep up what you're doing. We know that God blesses what we do in small towns, and we believe so strongly that He has you there for a purpose. As always, we can talk about the more formal channels of where you can find this podcast, whether it's Spotify, Apple Podcast, or our website, ruraladvancement.com. But true to the rural form, the best way to spread this podcast is really just from one pastor or leader looking at another and saying, hey, there's a group of conversations that you got to be a part of. So spread the word. Have a great week. I have been your host, Joe Epley, and he has been Pastor Tony Vietti, and we will see you next week.